appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been both to your client and the court. Thanks very much.
Judge.
The case is taken under advisement. We'll hear argument now in the case of Jenkins against Yeager.
That was funny. I'll never be viewed as a legal scholar.
Mr. Anderson.
Good morning. May it please the court. We're concerned in this case with applying to essentially undisputed facts several provisions of the ERISA statute and, to some degree, case law applying ERISA. And that task begins with the provisions of ERISA that have to do with delegation of fiduciary duties. We begin with Section 403A, which, of course, says that ERISA plan assets have to be held in trust and that the trustee has the exclusive authority and discretion to manage and control those assets. Now, ERISA Section 405C allows certain fiduciary duties under ERISA to be delegated, but not those responsibilities of the trustee to manage and control the plan assets, which it refers to with the term of art, trustee responsibilities. So that's the basis. That's the groundwork for where we start with. It's an exclusive responsibility in the trustee, and it can't be delegated. Now, factually, there's no dispute in this case that Mr. Yeager, the plan trustee, and MidAmerica, which was the plan administrator, put into place and followed through on a participant direction feature in this plan that by which the trustee delegated certain of these responsibilities to the participants, the responsibilities to manage and control the investment of the plan assets. And there's also no real dispute in this case that those are in the category of what ERISA refers to as trustee responsibilities. Now, the defendants in their
brief... You say there's no dispute, but I thought that, indeed, that's exactly what the defendants are disputing.
Well, I said there was no real dispute, Your Honor, and with all due respect...
And indeed, it was exactly what the district court held the defendants were correct on.
I don't think that's correct, Your Honor.
That the defendants are making this proposition, or you don't think the proposition they are making is legally correct?
I don't think the proposition they're making about whether or not these are trustee responsibilities is the proposition on which the district court found in their favor, because they didn't even make that argument until their appellate brief, Your Honor. The argument I'm referring to when I say that is this argument that because, in their view, the trust instrument was not part of the record, the court can't determine whether or not these are trustee responsibilities. Now, that's never an argument that was even made in the district court, let alone relied on by the district judge.
This is not a question about the trust instrument. It's a question about the meaning of ERISA. Your view, as I understand it, is that under ERISA, all investment control responsibilities are trust responsibilities. Another way to understand ERISA is that the non-delegable trust responsibilities are only the responsibility to safeguard the fund's assets, not hand them to your son to go spend on whatever your son wants, but that how the funds are invested is delegable. What case law will help you out one way or the other in supporting the proposition that the non-delegable responsibilities include investment choices?
I'm not sure if any case is directly on point that I'm aware of, Your Honor, in either direction.
Then forget ERISA. Look at the common law of trusts. We've had several hundred years of common law development about what trustees can delegate and what they can't. Under the common law of trusts, can a trustee delegate investment decisions to beneficiaries or to investment houses or to others?
Certainly, Your Honor, and under ERISA, they can do that too, and that's part of Section 403A, but they can only do it under certain circumstances, the investment advisor provisions in 403A, for instance. And, I mean, ERISA considers all of that. And a more general point about ERISA that I would make in this connection.
It doesn't consider all of that. You're relying on a fairly broad phrase in ERISA. And perhaps it has some interpretation in the ERISA case law, which I haven't been able to find. And then Firestone says if there's no particular definition of ERISA, we'd try to construe it in conformance to the common law of trusts.
Sure.
Which is then why I ask how the common law of trust does this. If you look at the restatement of trust, what does it say?
I don't have that at my fingertips, Your Honor. I believe the district court at least cited some provisions of the common law of trusts. But
even if we determine that the trust instrument is located within the plan document itself, shouldn't we read that plan document so as to give meaning to all its provisions? In other words, aren't you asking us to read the trust document in the plan document as pretty much rendering meaningless another portion of the plan document that gives employees control over their investments?
Well, it doesn't render it meaningless, Your Honor, but what I am asking you to find is that those other portions of the plan that purport to give the participants control but don't do it in compliance with Section 404C are in violation of ERISA. Because ERISA says it's an exclusive responsibility that can't be delegated. So unless there's some other portion of ERISA...
We're just back to your proposition that an investment choice can't be delegated, and that was the focus of my question.
I understand that, Your Honor.
You don't have any ERISA cases that say that, and you now concede that you haven't worked through the common law of trust, so you don't have any common law cases that say that. So why should we hold that?
What I was about to say a few minutes ago, Your Honor, is that that's not the way ERISA works. ERISA doesn't say, well, we're going to set some rock-bottom thing that the trustee needs to do, and then however the trustee gets there is the trustee's business. I mean, that's why ERISA has Section 406, which prohibits certain transactions categorically. That's why it very closely controls what the trustee can and cannot do. So to say that what exclusive authority and control really means is, well, at the end of the day, you're going to be held accountable, but how you get there is your business, just isn't consistent with the entire structure and scheme of ERISA. And quite briefly, if the court goes with me that far, that's what exclusive responsibilities and non-delegable responsibilities means, then the district court clearly made a mistake in reading some implied exception based on Section 404C, because, quite frankly, Section 404C, by its own terms, just has nothing to do with this case, because this isn't a Section 404C plan, so Section 404C doesn't authorize this plan to do anything, including delegate investment control to participants. Now, entirely separately from the question of whether this delegation in itself was a breach of fiduciary duties under ERISA, there's an entirely separate claim, which is that Mr. Yeager, as the trustee, breached his duty of prudence under ERISA, and he did that by essentially doing nothing with respect to monitoring these plan assets, not even considering whether changing circumstances would justify or require some change in the investments. By his own admission, Mr. Yeager had nothing to do, quote unquote, with participant investment decisions under this provision. And
if Yeager's approach was a long-term one, why would information regarding monthly or even annual fluctuations in performance matter, you know, at all to him? The essence of a long-term approach seems to be to stay with the fund through losses, and the net result over the long term, you know, will be better. Are you saying that the long-term approach itself raises questions as to prudence because it necessarily ignores the up and down fluctuation in performance?
I don't think I'm saying exactly that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that by waving the magic wand of saying I'm a long-term investor, you don't excuse yourself from paying some attention to the circumstances of what's going on.
Excuse yourself from doing what? You either make a long-term investment and ignore the market, or you try to outguess the market. There are They're not compatible strategies. You have to choose one or the other.
Your Honor, if the court
There's large and respectable literature from real certifiable scholars, none of whom is on this panel, that a trustee's duty is to buy and hold and not try to outguess the market, because then you incur transactions fees without improving your position. So,
well,
what is your position about what the fiduciary duty is? Is it to buy and hold, or is it to try to outsmart the market?
Your Honor, it is not meeting the fiduciary's duty to pick some investments in 1991 and for the next 10 or 11 years not pay
your
any attention.
The fiduciary duty is to try and outsmart the market. And you've got, I think at this point, the entire legal academy that's concerned with trust law on the other side. To a man, they think that's folly.
Your Honor, I do not believe it is the same thing to say outsmart the market as it is to say keep an eye on the investments, actually know what's going on with them, and decide from time to time whether the particular long-term strategy you have chosen continues to make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
Mr. Davis.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Roy Davis. I represent Mr. Yeager and MidAmerica in this case. For purposes of resolving the issues before this court, I accept counsel's representation that what is labeled the MidAmerica Designs, Inc. Employee Savings and Profit Sharing Plan is in fact a trust. Accepting his representation, however, does nothing to advance the merits of this case.
It better be a trust, because if it's not, then it assuredly is out of compliance with ERISA.
Unless, of course, there's another document not in the record that is the trust.
If Mr. Yeager's decisions were based on a long-term approach without regard to, you know, monthly or even annual fluctuations in performance, shouldn't he have at least made sure that no negative information had surfaced, casting doubt on the reputation of the American funds itself? I mean, for instance, if you read about all these people being indicted in WorldCom and you said,
right.
I
think he should have, and I think he did. In fact, I believe he didn't use WorldCom, but he might have used Enron as an example. And Mr. Yeager's point was simply that he selected these American funds with a lot of background and investigation, and unless he saw something fundamentally go bad like that, he was going to stick with them. And he had been a personal investor in those funds for many years before he actually invested the profit-sharing money in those funds. Our view is that the plan document itself permits Mr. Yeager to delegate the authority to invest some of this money to the participants at page 91. He certainly did that. He was certainly true to the terms of the trust, and there can be no argument that he violated 403. With respect to whether or not the funds and the decisions to stick with them were a violation of fiduciary duty, I think we've covered the invest and hold issue. There are a couple of other arguments made by counsel, number one being that Mr. Yeager should have investigated each individual's position and decided whether or not their selections were appropriate, whatever that may mean for them. And I think this court has rejected that argument at least twice. And I think the rest of the arguments
one could say, this is something that I think the academic view of trust finance would represent, that a person in Yeager's position is both able and responsible to choose an investment vehicle with low overhead costs.
Correct.
Has there been any claim in this case that the overhead charges of these funds were unreasonably high compared with, say, the overhead charges of the Vanguard funds?
None. And there is
evidence. That's something that doesn't require the trustee to beat the market. You can actually go out and look at
that. That is correct. And Yeager testified that he looked at Vanguard, Putnam, Fidelity, and a number of others before he settled on the American funds. Your Honors, I think your questioning demonstrates you understand the issues, and I really have nothing more to add by way of argument, although I'd be pleased to answer questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm giggling because the last one was talking about legal scholars, and you're talking about people who probably understand what they're hearing. It's very funny today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our final